Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
He looks at a three-man Chicago front and five in the secondary. Shotgun snap. He drops back from his Redskin 21, throws a pass. It's intercepted on the play by Clinton Dix at the 30. Down the sideline, the 20. A block at the 10. Down the sideline, the 5. Breaks a tackle into the end zone. Touchdown, Chicago. A pick six by the former Redskin. Ha-ha, Clinton Dix.
I mean, it felt good. I haven't had a touchdown on defense since Little League. I don't even think I had one then. But it felt good, man. And I knew I wouldn't get it anywhere else but at this place. So I'm excited about that.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Ha-ha Clinton Dix against his former team. The first to do damage on defense. The first turnover of the Bears against the Redskins. And it just unraveled from there for the Washington Redskins. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Kevin Harlan with the call on Westwood One. So how bad is it? That's a question we are going to pose to our Redskins insider from 106.7 The Fan in D.C. joining us now right after finishing up his duties at FedEx Field. Craig Hoffman, thanks so much for a couple of minutes. How bad is it for the Redskins after this 0-3 start?
Yeah, Amy, it's a tough question to answer because the football has been really, really bad. And that's without question. There is no argument I can hear that I give any validity to that says there has been really anything more than a few redeeming qualities about the level at which they played. But I think that for as much dysfunction as we feel like this organization has at times, that's not in the locker room here. And that is really important because it gives you hope that this team can pull it together because they are talented and move forward in a positive direction. But I mean, the stuff they're doing is really frustrating on a football level. Turning the ball over tonight five times for Case Keenum is just a disastrous kind of night. Not getting the ball to guys like Terry McLaurin, who's having a literally historic rookie season. And then defensively, it's some of the same issues they've had year after year here. Some of these rub routes and short yardages, whether it's third and one where they give it up and they're giving up over 60% on third down on the year, or in the red zone, two of their touchdowns come on the same kind of play. So it's been a really, really frustrating 3 weeks. And I think from a football standpoint, it's not the Dolphins, so that's nice, but it's pretty bad.
How do you know the locker room is still together, still unified, and still moving forward?
The consistency of the message. You know, Jay Gruden says, hey, we're together. And it seems authentic and genuine in a way that sometimes I think, you know, it's really kind of our job to see through if it's not that way. I think that then you go talk to the players after that, and guys like Josh Norman, guys like Landon Collins, rookies like Cole Holcomb, John Allen, who's a young player still, but is one of their captains and a tone setter in the locker room. They're all saying the exact same thing, and it seems to come from a genuine place. And, you know, I take a guy like Norman's word pretty seriously on this because he's been around winning teams. He's been around for a long time. He played in a Super Bowl, and to hear him say the things he said about his teammates, and for a guy that has not always said that. When there's been problems, he's said we've got problems and we got to fix them. I tend to think that this is genuinely a locker room that believes in the talent within itself, believes in the coaching staff, and believes they just need to play better.
We have heard a lot about Dwayne Haskins, and we've seen a lot of teams make changes. I know you were tweeting about it during the game. What does Jay Gruden have to say about his quarterback spot, especially after this awful start for Keenum?
Yeah, he shut that down pretty quick. He said that he wants to see continuity and that, you know, he reminded the media that and reminded us that nobody in this offense has really played together. You know, Donald Penn and Eric Flowers, the left side of their offensive line, these guys haven't played in this offense before. Case hasn't played in this offense before. So to give him just three games would not be fair in Jay's mind. I think on some level that's a little bit of lip service. But the real issue with Dwayne Haskins playing is not Case Keenum. It's Dwayne Haskins. Dwayne's not ready to play. And had he proven himself worthy of playing during the spring and then during training camp, he would have gotten reps with the ones and had a chance to win the job. He didn't because he wasn't good enough. And I think the problems that he has, like putting him out there tonight would have been a disaster because the biggest problem he has is protecting himself and against a Bears offensive line that went to town like they did on Keenum. Like, good luck to a rookie who can't protect himself. I think Keenum played at a level tonight that is going to get him benched. I don't know if it's later in the season for Haskins or I think Colt McCoy is going to practice this week, and I don't think he's going to be ready to quite play on Sunday against the Giants. I don't know if they necessarily want to make that move on a short week. And, you know, New England's coming in after that, so that's a real treat. But I think we're going to see three quarterbacks in Washington this year, and I don't think it's going to be injury-related. I think it's going to be performance and record-related, a.k.a. Keenum's not going to all of a sudden magically get better, and so they're going to put Colt in because Colt would have won the job coming out of camp if he hadn't hurt his ankle again. And then at some point during the year, you have to think that Haskins is the guy, but that's going to come at a point where they're more out of it than they are at 0-3. And I think like 3.4% of teams make the playoffs from 0-3. So that could be a while.
Although it did happen last year. Craig Hoffman is with us, covers the Redskins for 106.7 The Fan in D.C. And fresh off Monday Night Football, it's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. The stat that pops into my brain I just saw on social media is that the Redskins are 1-9 without Alex Smith. What's your reaction to that?
I mean, tonight's a pretty easy comparison. Alex doesn't turn the ball over ever. Case turned it over 5 times. So there's your, that's what I think about when I hear that stat. I mean, Keenum is the guy that it gives you a little boom or bust, but like they didn't even take any shots tonight. They didn't take any shots down the field, so you got none of the boom and all of the bust. So I think with Alex, there is a belief, there is a, you know, we can win with this guy feel, but there's also just a level of execution that while he checks the ball down way too much and leaves a ton of yards on the field, at least he doesn't turn it over, and that gives you a chance. Tonight they didn't have a chance, and the 5 turnovers are the biggest reason for that.
You mentioned Terry McLaurin, and as the rookie, he's been a really bright spot. Why does he fit so well into this offense?
He's just really good and really smart. I don't think it's really that complicated. One, he's got 4.3 speed, and he's learned very quickly at the NFL level how to leverage that. So how does he manage the speed on his routes to where he can scare a DB, stop, you know, pick up a quick 12 yards on a stop route? How does he set a guy up and get over the middle on a slant? He's big, strong, and physical, so he's pretty hard to take down. You know, you get him on a slant, he's going to run through arm tackles or gain an extra 5 yards as he drags the DB who's trying to bring him down. And then he's obviously been able to find the end zone, too. And there's another play tonight where he would have probably scored again. He's screaming across in a red zone situation, and Khalil Mack wound up getting a sack on that play, I believe. So it protection, you took another touchdown away from him. He could have had 2 in other games as well this year if Case had hit him on throws where he's open deep. So I think Terry's intelligence stands out to anybody that talks to him for more than 5 seconds. I think his speed is quite obvious, and I think his strength and his toughness are probably the things that are a little more under the radar, but the more you're around him, you understand how important those things are.
See, there's always a silver lining, even when it's an 0-3 start. Craig, the red zone defense has been, it's been a mess. It's near the bottom of the NFL, although it's only been 3 games. But what are they doing to address that?
I mean, that's the one that really, really bothers me, Amy, as someone who watches the tape of this team, and it's the same stuff over and over again. You go back and watch the tape week 2 last year against Indianapolis, and they're just running these rub routes on 3rd down. And, you know, I was talking to one of their defensive coaches afterwards, and he's basically saying, like, the way to stop these routes that keep getting them is to stay out of those situations. And that's not really a great answer. It's like, well, you're going to get screwed if you play man-to-man because they're just going to play a leverage game. Okay, well, then quit playing man-to-man. Like, figure out how to zone that up. There's got to be some answers somewhere in this because, I mean, yes, these routes are really effective. The things that have killed him in the red zone are really effective, but they can't be so effective that you feel literally hopeless. And I think that's what's really frustrating is they don't seem to have great answers. And I think part of that, too, it's tough for us collectively as media to get answers because Jay is such an offensive coach. I would love for Minuski, their defensive coordinator, Greg Minuski, to have a press conference after games to be able to explain his side of the ball because often Jay is not, like, he can't. He's not the one making the calls, and there's only so much that he sees because he's also previewing the next offensive series and things like that. But I don't really have great answers for you on that side of the ball. It has been one of the most mystifying things in the whole league to me because I thought this was a defense that could be top 10 level good. And then said they're giving up 30-plus points a game. They've given up 30 in every game, so.
Yeah, for sure. Craig Hoffman of 106.7 The Fan with us here for just another minute on After Hours CBS Sports Radio. So it seemed like there were a heck of a lot of Bears fans at the game on Monday night. How did it sound to you?
Sounded like a Redskins road game. There were fans, but the Bears fans were louder for most of what I could tell, and there were a lot of empty seats in that stadium. That to me was the bigger thing. You know, last week there were way more Cowboys fans, or I mean, it felt kind of like the Cotton Bowl in Dallas when the Texas and Oklahoma play, where it's just like a dead split. Everyone behind the Cowboys side was wearing blue, everyone else was wearing burgundy, and the top was a little bit more burgundy shaded. But tonight, like, it was split. The Bears fans were loud, and there was nobody in the upper deck. It was really bizarre to see an NFL stadium that empty this early in the year for a primetime game. That's a must-win game. The deterioration of this fan base is one of the great stories. Not great in terms of magnitude, obviously not great in terms of like, hey, this is a good thing. But it is one of the really significant stories in the NFL to me. Because this is a franchise that was a shining beacon of the league for a long, long time. And to see the fan base erode like it has, it matters for the league. And there are people in New York at the league office who are paying attention.
How frustrating is it for the players now that FedEx Field is no longer a home field advantage?
It's really frustrating. And they know it. You know, guys like Chris Thompson, who have been around here forever, have talked about this before. Multiple players talked about this before, just saying, like, at this point we know what to expect. It's frustrating, but they also, you know, say, hey, we haven't really given them a whole lot to cheer for, so they understand it on that level for sure. But it's frustrating, and I can't imagine ownership being happy about it, but you know, a lot of the fans aren't showing up because of ownership, so that's another fun conundrum to figure out.
Craig Hoffman, with the good, the bad, and the ugly about the Redskins. You can follow him on Twitter easily with his name from our D.C. affiliate, fresh off Monday Night Football, and Giants up next in the NFC East. Thanks so much for a couple of minutes.
You got it, Amy. To New York I come.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.